I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Motorsport Magazine, for the very best in motor racing.
Welcome everybody and thank you for joining us on this, the latest Motorsport Magazine podcast. So wherever you are in the global village, keep listening, because this month it's rallying. Yep, for the first time ever, we tackle the World Rally Championship. And with us we have the BP Ford Abu Dhabi World Rally Championship team. I got it right. Fantastic. Anyway, they're from Ford, as we know. And we are going to take a look with them at, and I'll introduce them in a moment, we're going to take a look at the with them at the World Rally Championship 2010, or Formula Loeb, as it's known in France, I believe, a country not known for its lack of nationalism. So welcome Malcolm Wilson, the team principal of the aforementioned BP Ford Abu Dhabi World Rally team, and to Matt Wilson. We are going to fearlessly question them in the true spirit of Motorsport Magazine. And to do that, we have our editor, Damien Smith, we have Ed Foster, and we have our veteran Grand Prix expert, Nigel Roback, who, by his own admission, knows very little indeed about the World Rally Championship. So, we will start, I think, if you don't mind, Malcolm Wilson, and I'd like to just get this out of the way, really, start with the Loeb factor, which I would liken to the Schumacher factor, which is that if one man keeps on winning everything, is it any surprise that people get a little bit fed up with it?
Yeah, it's. But I think with being so close to the sport, you appreciate it, how good the likes of Loeb is. And we see it as, from our point of view, from a technical and point of view, is that it's a challenge to be able to try and find a way to actually beat him. So I think, from a spectating point of view, and that then, of course, it can become a bit tedious or whatever, you know, him winning all the time. But of course, a lot of positive things now with Mini coming into the World Championship as well. So there's a lot of people now talking about rally that that certainly for the last 2 or 3 years there hasn't been any real incentive for anything to really move the sport forward. You know,
is that a yes, it is getting a bit dull, or a no, it's not good?
No, I don't think it's... I mean, certainly from where we're sat, it's definitely not dull. as I say, he presents a fantastic challenge. And, of course, next year is a whole new story with new cars and everything like that. And nobody really knows where it's all going to be, but I think it's a great opportunity for us to really mount a strong challenge towards him next year. And, of course, the problem we've got is there's another Sebastian coming in the wings. That's Andy's French as well. So hopefully there'll be a bit of internal fighting there that'll help us in our cause.
Sebastian must be the Christian name of the century at the moment, I should think. Matt, you are very well placed. No mean driver yourself. You were teammates with Lewis Hamilton in Formula Renault as well. So you're well placed to see what it is that Loeb has that you would love to have, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like my dad said, I think there's that challenge to beat him. And I think if you can beat him, you know that you've beaten probably the best driver in WRC history. So I think there's definitely that challenge there. We would all love to have a slice of what he has and know what makes him so good, I think. He's just on another level altogether.
I mean, in Formula One, people used to talk about Schumacher and say, well, yes, okay, but, you know, he's the number one driver, the number two doesn't mean anything, he's got the best car, etc., etc. How much of that is true in WRC with Loeb and Citroën?
I think, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think a lot of it is true. I mean, you've seen that Danny Sordo, his teammate, has purely been there as a backup, you know, as a backup to him. And there is times when Danny could have for sure won his first rally, and that was taken away from him, from Sebastian, you know, to get the more points to do better in the championship. So, yeah, I mean, I think there is that idea there, and obviously he's a French driver in a French team. You know, he's going to be well looked after. So there is that element to it, but I think you can't take away how good he actually is, and I think that's, you know, that is the challenge.
I mean, the fact that he's, as you say, you know, he's very much number one. Would you, I mean, if there was an opportunity to actually go up against him in equal machinery, would that be something you'd sort of grasp, or would you sort of back away because of the, like, one and, I mean, obviously it's difficult because of the Citroën and four thing, but I mean, would you love to go have the equal chance and go for it like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think any driver would love to pit themselves against him in the same car, but I think we've seen all the people that have come up against him over the years in the same car, they've never been able to beat him. And I think really there's nobody that's beat him on tarmac since 2004, whether it was in, you know, a Ford or a Citroën or whatever it was. So that shows you literally how good it is no matter what car you're in, I think. But yeah, I think if you asked any driver, they would love to go up against him in equal machinery. But you know, our focus has been strong for the last few years as well, maybe not as strong on tarmac, but you know, it's still been up there, and we struggle to beat him on most occasions anyway. So I think he's definitely I think he's the best that's ever been, for sure.
Malcolm, would you agree with that? I mean, you've seen so many great drivers over the years. Would you put him at the absolute top?
Oh, absolutely, no question. I mean, you know, really? My hero was always Walter Rowe, because he was, yes, for me, Walter was, yes, ahead of his time. He was, yeah, like, you program him for certain events. You know, sure, he was so clever that he got himself in a position where he only did the events where he could win. Now, okay, that can't happen in this day and age, but he was, you know, just fantastic, and the way that he was able to sort of win the events, you know, four consecutive Monte Carlos, different car each year. Yeah, yeah. He just knew that if Walter was going to do a rally, then he was the favourite for the event. Yeah. But Sebastian has basically way surpassed all that. I mean, to think that he's won twice as many World Championship events as any of the previous highest scores, the Kankanens, the Saintsies, the McRaes. Mm, mm. That in itself. And as Matthew said, I mean, there's been so many, he's had so many teammates, and nobody, yeah, you know, Colin, Carlos, Francois Duval, Danny Sordo. Yeah. But as I touched on before, I think next year is going to be somewhat different. You know, we've seen this year on two or three rallies where Sebastian Ogier has actually been quicker, and he's actually got the victory. So I think, you know, it's probably going to be his most difficult year next year. And the fact that it's from his teammate, I think it's going to make it even even more exciting. I think there's going to be some fireworks in the camp. So
do you think Loeb still is as good as he ever was, or do you think maybe just past his?
No, I think he's proved again every tarmac rally since the last person to genuinely beat him on tarmac was Marco Martin in the Focus in 2004. Mm. Just no mistakes, and then to go to new events, completely new to everybody, like Bulgaria and France this year. Okay, France is his home rally, but you think, right, it's an opportunity, you know, for some driver to really mount a challenge, but nobody's been able to even mount a challenge. I think gravel will be easier to challenge him, but certainly at the moment, I don't see anybody being able to actually beat him on asphalt.
No.
I can't see that happening in the next 2 or 3 years, unless, you know, hopefully we end up with a car that's so superior.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we'll take that mantle. But you'd have to say, if you looked at straight drivers in the same equipment, I can't see that happening.
Well, Martin Brundle said to me that he reckoned Loeb has to be the best all-round driver on earth.
Well, that's
given that, you know, I mean, he's, you know, put him in a Formula One car for a test, and he's respectable, and, you know, does Le Mans and all the rest of it. I mean, he does seem to have.
Yeah, and he's got this incredible level of
all-round ability,
level of concentration, and yeah, it's just simply the best that I've ever witnessed in my time in the sport.
Right.
We are in danger of it becoming the Sebastian Loeb show.
Yeah, I apologise. I'm just always interested in this sort of...
No, it's just...
people's opinion of who is the best of all time.
We've talked about these new cars for next year. Malcolm, maybe you could explain a little bit about what the new cars are, how they're going to change rally, and how you think it might shake things up.
Well, I think the big difference is that there's a lot less technology in one sense in the new cars. We've done away with a lot of the exotic materials, so we have no titanium, we have no carbon fibre. We've got a reduced engine from a 2-litre to a 1.6. And of course, we're back very much in the transmission ways of quite agriculture in one sense, because we've got a fixed solid centre diff. So I think the cars will be a little bit more spectacular because of that. I think they'll be a little bit more exciting as well, because we've got a slightly higher revving engine. So hopefully that, you know, that's been a criticism by a lot of spectators, that you don't get the noise from a turbocharged car. And then, of course, when the Super 2000 came along, I mean, everybody loves to hear that because they're screaming at about 8,500 RPM. So I still feel that the cars, and actually they'll be every bit as spectacular, if not even more so, next year. So I think it's exciting times. I mean, it's a big challenge for us. The biggest probably challenge is direct injection on the engine side. It's something that, you know, we've never had in a rally car before. I think the rest of the chassis side, from our point of view, is the good thing is that our car is based on the Fiesta. So we've had 12 months running with Super 2000, so we've learned a lot from various customers all over the world, plus the stuff that we've been doing ourselves. So hopefully we'll be in a good position. But of course, there's a great unknown with the engine side, because we've got a fixed. We're all on the same turbocharger. It's an FIA regulation turbocharger. We're all on the same boost limit, FIA controlled. So I think it's going to be a big challenge for the engineers and the designers again to come up with that special ingredient.
And are you in agreement with sort of standardised engines and that kind of thing? Is that where the future should be?
Yeah, I think everybody knows. I mean, it's been a difficult time for the motor industry, and I'm really pleased to see that, you know, we've been working really well with the FIA technical side on trying to find ways to reduce the cost. And of course, next year we've only got, from April onwards, we've only got two engines for the season. So all these sort of things are really, from our point of view, it's never ever been as cost effective to get into the WRC. So it's a great opportunity for new manufacturers to come in at a very realistic price. Mm.
And Matt, from the driver's perspective, would you think you'll have to change your style to cater for the new cars?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's like my dad said, it goes back a little bit more to the older days. I mean, you're taking away all the driver type aids, if you like, no launch control, no paddle gear shift. So it is back to being a little bit more physical and a bit more sort of hard work for the driver. But I think, you know, we mentioned like the solid centre diff and stuff like that. I think it does make it more spectacular, and, you know, you're going to see a little bit more sideways driving for sure. Mm. So hopefully that should suit me a little bit more. That's always been my style, maybe from the older generation. I think it's something I maybe learned from him.
Thanks.
But what about Ken Block?
Yeah, well, it should suit him.
Yeah, it'll really suit Ken, to be honest.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I've actually done quite a significant amount of driving in the car already. From the first time it turned a wheel, I was involved with the car. So that's been quite exciting, seeing something run for the first time and being involved with it right the way up through the stages of it. Then it's quite exciting, and it gives you a real good insight and feeling for the car. So really looking forward to it, and yeah, should be good for us.
F1 drivers, you know, tend to say that after their first test they know whether they've got a good car for the next season. Is that something you can sort of tell after all the testing you've done with the Fiesta? Does it feel like a good car?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, I think it was amazing, especially on asphalt. I jumped in the car, and after five runs up and down this piece of road, I got out of the car and I said, well, I feel more comfortable now, and I feel like I can push harder in this car than I can in the Focus. Yeah. And I think that's just, maybe it comes from the smaller chassis and maybe it's more nimble or whatever, but I think Yeah, it does feel difficult getting back into the Focus now, because it does feel like a big car. And don't get me wrong, the Focus is still an incredible car to drive. But I think it's just after having driven it, it's just so small and nimble and changes direction so well. I think that it is difficult to get back into it. It feels like a massive car, really. So,
well, you will.
What's the power difference, Martin?
The power, at the end of the day, there won't be much difference in the power between the 2 litre and the 1.6. Where we'll really lose out is the torque. Mm. So, as an example, we've got the 5-speed gearbox in the Focus, mm-hmm. which we definitely couldn't run in a Fiesta, because we don't have the torque to do that.
Right.
So I think that's why I say, higher revs, the driver will have to work the car a lot more, as Matthew said. So you'll really have to be on top of your game to make sure you don't drop below the RPM.
I think it's one of them. Sure. It's one of them cars where you basically your heartbeat always feels like it's harder, because every corner you have to attack it. Whereas at the minute it's quite a relaxed driving style, if you like, quite neat and tidy and very easy with the paddle gear shift. And I think now it's the best way to describe it is your heart rate is probably a lot higher, because every corner is basically you having to really push the car.
Yeah, this has got to be a good thing, hasn't it, for all of us, not just you in the car. I mean, as spectators, as fans, as enthusiasts, we want to see a bit more of that, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's great, again, not having just a normal sequential gear shift as well. Yeah. With the paddle shifts, as Matthew says, mid-corner you get something, it's tight, whereas now, the driver's going to have to think a lot more about being in the right gear for the corner and being able to attack.
Talking about having to think about things, those Group B cars were something else, and you're a good man to ask about it. Be honest, how much of a challenge were they, even for someone who's pretty damn good at it?
I always class that as the biggest challenge when it from all my driving career, because first of all, four-wheel drive was again a very sort of agricultural system, solid centre diff, no handbrake releases in those days, so you couldn't even use your handbrake anymore. But the biggest challenge then was, of course, your turbo lag. Because you didn't have, for the first sort of Group B cars, you didn't have any anti-lag systems, anything like that. So, of course, it was learning a whole new technique. Because, coming from a rear-wheel drive Escort, the last thing you ever did was left-foot brake. That was just the last thing you did with a Mark II, Mark I or Mark II Escort. You never needed to do that. Yeah. And then, but, of course, then you had to left-foot brake, not for the driving style, but, to keep the turbo spinning. So it was a great era, don't get me wrong. I think I derived more satisfaction from being able to master that type of car at that time than anything else. But still nothing like driving an Escort.
We've been coming back here for the last few minutes. I felt it coming on.
But that's what you drive those for fun, don't you? You still enjoy getting an Escort now, so...
I mean, they're just incredibly. The thing that what really disappoints me now, when if I ever do step into one and you drive one and you think, well, why did I have so many accidents in this car? Because you can literally, you can do anything with them. You can make them talk, and you just think, why did you have accidents? But I suppose that in those days, again, everybody was driving absolutely flat out trying to. But
you are so well placed, aren't you? To identify what you need out of Ford that, say, Citroën has already got. I mean, can you just sum up what it is that you haven't had?
What we haven't had?
Yeah.
I don't think we're... I think we... Not made a mistake, but... when we did our current Focus... right out of the box, we set fastest times on in Australia. And then, of course, we went 2006, we had Marcus, we won Monte Carlo. Okay, Sebastian, that's the one exception. He made a mistake, but he still finished second. But I think looking back, we could have been a lot more competitive on tarmac. We were every bit as competitive on gravel. But, there's a couple of things that One, I think that we paid a price for a little bit on tarmac was the 5-speed gearbox, relying on the torque rather than on the more peaky engine for asphalt. And of course, you know, the focus is slightly bigger than the C4. And of course, when you're at this level, you know, the slightest thing is is time. So I don't think we've I suppose the one thing that we have that we don't have is the, as you say, the lobe factor, because I think, you know, whatever he'd been in, he would have still been winning all the rallies.
Really?
Do you? You do think that?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. This is not great news, Matthew, is it, really? I mean,
no, but I'm not the only one to worry about it.
You really think, Malcolm, if he'd been driving for you, no matter who had been in the Citroën, it wouldn't have...
Yeah, I think if... Okay, it would, I have to be honest and say that these last few months it would have been more difficult for him. Mm. Because we've struggled a bit this season, to be honest, but we regrouped after, was it Bulgaria, and we got back where we needed to be. But of course, you know, we've been, I'm not saying we've still been doing all the testing and everything, but of course what happened sort of 18 months ago was the technical regulations were frozen from the FIA, so because of course the car was being phased out. Mm. So there was very little that you could do. As an example, if we could have, we would probably have gone to a 6-speed box, and we would have looked at changing our engine characteristics, for instance, for this year, if we'd had that possibility. But of course, we didn't, and of course, we've been flat out, you know, developing the new car for next year as well.
Yeah. There's someone we better talk about. We've got a feature on him in the new issue, Kimi Räikkönen. Oh. Come on, guys, what's your verdict? Come on, you've got to tell us. What do you think?
He's slow, isn't he, Matthew?
I think from my side, I think maybe people looking from the outside have maybe thought that he hasn't done a very good job. But from my side, I think it was difficult to expect anything else. I mean, you know, you can never come into rallying and try and win in your first year. I think... You know, he's obviously got the driving talent, there's no doubt about that, but I think a lot of people don't realise it's not that, it's all the other stuff that goes with it. It's making the pace notes, having only two passes on the recce to make good pace notes and to actually trust them when you come to the rally. And I think there's all that other side of it, the recces, all that thing that, you know, that he sort of didn't really have any idea about. He'd done 3 or 4 rallies before he came to Sweden this year. So really, I don't think you could have expected, you know, a lot real of difference to what he's done. Okay, maybe he's had more accidents than he maybe should have, and I think one thing is, you know, what he maybe could have done more is maybe get to the end of the rallies and learn more. But in terms of speed, I don't think you could really expect, you know, anything different.
I think there's this assumption that if you're a Formula One driver, you are the best, and that's the end of it. And, you know, if you look at Montoya in NASCAR, he's won a couple of races, but he's not found it easy. Mm. It's a totally different discipline. And just back to Brundle, when he said to me that he thinks that world's top rally drivers are the most complete drivers on Earth, he was making the point that he said, you know, if we get a situation in Formula One when suddenly on Saturday it's pouring down for qualifying and it's been bone dry to that point, there's sort of near sort of hysteria. God, you know, how do we cope and all the rest of it? And he said, you know, for a top rally driver, every special stage is like that, because conditions might be totally
different
from what you've practiced on, and you've got one shot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we do the recce on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and then you maybe, well, especially with a Sunday, that's like 4 or 5 days later than you've seen the road, and it can dramatically change. I mean, we've seen before in the past where, you know, it maybe rains really heavily, and it, you know, the road can get washed away with the gravel and all that sort of thing. And I mean, in instances of GB a couple of years ago, we had snow on the recce, and then we had no snow for the rally.
No.
All that changes, and that's what you have to basically cope with. And especially this year as well, I mean, you, with a single make tyre, you can maybe leave service and the stages are, you know, are dry, and then you get into the stage and it can be absolutely pouring down, and you have to cope with that on a hard tyre, basically. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of challenges, and that's what really appealed to me about rallying. I went, obviously did 2 or 3 years of circuit racing. Mm. And if I'm honest, I'm really probably got bored of going round in circles, really.
Well, I wanted to ask you, actually, was it that or was it Hamilton's lap times? Which was it?
Well, yeah, it was both, really. No, I mean, don't get me wrong, I learnt a lot from racing. I learnt a lot from Formula Renault. I mean, the level of competition was very high. And, you know, 30-odd cars in the grid. And, you know, by the end of the year, we were getting inside the top 10. And, you know, but what was strange for me was you went to Brands Hatch and you were, you know, I think you were 0.4 or 0.5 of a second off pole, but you were 13th on the grid. Mm. And that was the level of competition. Mm. But that taught you a lot. You know, it taught you a lot for rallying, that tiny, tiny little amount can make a big difference. So, yeah, there was obviously that factor to it. But what really appeals to me about rallying is, you know, you go to Sweden, you're driving on snow and ice. You go to France, you're driving on tarmac. You're in gravel in Mexico, sure, or Argentina or whatever it is.
Sure.
And every rally is totally different. And I think that's what I like and what you have to master to get it right, I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how much of mastering that is down to your co-driver as well? Because, you know, we're talking about pace notes. And obviously, it's a lot of that is you as a driver, you know, doing and relaying what you think.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's because obviously Kimi's got quite a good relationship with this co-driver, I think, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
I mean, is that where he's going wrong? Just him actually being able to download all the information to him, or?
I think, yeah, I mean, a pace note system takes a long time to develop. And, I mean, even now, I mean, I've been driving for 6 or 7 years, and you still never ever stop learning in terms of pace notes and changing your system. I mean, you go through a stage probably where you have too much information, and then you take that away and you probably have a little bit too less information. And it's a fine balance. And I think if you ask any driver, they never stop learning that. But a good strong co-driver can really help you that, especially on a recce. You know, you say, right, that corner's maybe not quite flat out, but it's close to it. And if you have a good co-driver and they know as well what the car can do, you know, like you, they'll say, well, no, I think you can take that corner flat out, or you think that it's maybe a little bit tighter than it actually is. And if you have that relationship, then, you know, that can make a big difference.
Malcolm, last question on Kimi. How would you fancy being his team boss then? There's all sorts of rumours for next year about him getting a Ford, isn't there? So what do you take from a team boss's perspective?
I'm glad that he's been with another team for his first 12 months. I would certainly hope that he didn't do as much damage if he was with us in his second season. But yeah, I mean, we'd definitely be interested in it. I think it's great in one sense that, you know, when he came to rally, I think, like Matthew said, it's a lot of people, even the press, I think, underestimated the challenge for him. Mm. I remember one of the journalists in Sweden, as an example, and Jari Matti said, well, we can probably, if he gets under 5 seconds a kilometre behind me, he'll be doing very well. And the journalist just said, no. He laughed. He thought Kimi would be right up there. Mm. But, you know, when you look at his times and some of the classic stages, then, and a lot of that is, like Matthew says, it's experience. And, you know, you've just got to keep doing the events, get the experience, get the finishes, and then start to build on that. And that's really where he's, for me, that he's lost out this season.
Are you going to run him next year?
No, I mean, to be honest, genuinely, we have not had any negotiation with him. There's a lot of rumours about him joining the Monster team. For sure, hopefully we're still running the Monster team next year. I think, you know, they've been speaking to him, but there's definitely nothing confirmed at the moment. Mm.
I must say, I do have total admiration for the man who sits alongside him. I mean, I wanted to ask one quick, really amateur question of you, Malcolm. And that is, with there being two people in the car, one is driving, one is reading the notes, do you totally, totally have blind faith in what you're hearing? Or are you also thinking, hang on a minute, is that it doesn't look quite right what I'm seeing 100 yards up there? I mean, I really want to know that whole thing, that trust thing.
No, you have to have absolute. Really? You couldn't win rallies or be competitive if you didn't have complete trust. And I mean, you see now a lot of the accidents are caused by, you know, a wrong note or a late call or didn't hear. You know, it, it's impossible to remember 350 kilometres of road, so you have to have complete confidence. But again, that's where the experience, because then you make your pace notes. So if you have got a crucial place, a blind crest or whatever it is, and it's just like, you know, you need to make your notes so that you've got total confidence of what the co-driver's telling you, that it's, you know, you, it means so much to you as a driver when that happens. So
how long does that take with, say, with someone new, a new co-driver, how long does it take before you get to the point of, right, I trust this guy completely?
Oh no, I think you can trust the guy on your very first rally.
Really?
I don't I don't think that's an issue. Well, you have to. I mean, if you look at this year, Petter changed and immediately he's competitive and he's got the confidence.
Yeah, sure.
He's got the confidence.
But some presumably must be better than others, and I.
Yeah, there's no question.
You know, I mean,
I think the difference is if you get a really, really good one, they can instill you with a lot of confidence.
Yes.
You know, and I think that comes from before the rally even starts on the recce. I think they can really help you there and instill that confidence in you. Mm. And the way that they read the notes as well, whether they can, you know, how the tone of voice and everything, that all that makes
delivery.
A big difference. And it's you know, it's that can really, you know, it can give you that confidence, or it can maybe make you.
The thing that always strikes me is how laid back they sound, how completely relaxed. And you think that they're in the middle of this absolute chaos.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And they're still sort of saying, you know.
And they can't see either. That's the other thing. No, it's all done.
And they're looking down.
Yeah. It's all done.
But again, are they all much of a muchness in that, or are some a bit more excitable? Or
They're all different. I mean, it's like the drives are different, and, you know, some. Most of the co-drivers, they feel what's happening. As Matthew said, they've got their head down, they can't see out of the car. Everything, they're feeling everything through the seat of the pants, basically, as to what the car's actually doing. And, of course, you know, some are better at it than others.
Yeah.
Seeing as we're 2 weeks away from the Rally GB in Wales, might it be useful for you, Matthew, to give us a guide as to where, for those who don't know, that is, the best places, some of the, you know, say a few of the really best places to go and watch, because you can get very close to the cars on that rally, can't you? It's highly spectacular in places, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is now the third time that we're actually going up to Mid Wales, to like the classic Sweet Lamb and Halfren area. So I think, you know, I would definitely recommend people to go into the Sweet Lamb, you know, into the bowl complex. It's probably the closest thing you'll get to like a natural grandstand. Mm-hmm. And you, like you say, you get really, really close to the cars and the action. So I think I'd definitely recommend that. And it's classic stages, like I said. But also, I think on the Saturday we do some quite new stuff for us. I mean, we're on tarmac up on Epint, which it's first for me. I've never done that. So that could be quite interesting. You see a little bit of action up there, I'm sure, with gravel tyres on tarmac. It could be interesting. So yeah, there is some new aspects to it this year, which it could make it quite interesting, I think.
There's a special, super special in Cardiff Bay, right?
Yeah.
Well, so it says here.
You said that with a lot of enthusiasm, didn't it?
Well, Cardiff Bay isn't my favourite place in the world, okay? That's fine. But it's much improved by a rally car going quickly around it. Just tell us, what is this? What is this all about?
This is I think it's a new super special that they've created, which is, like you say, it's around the docks in Cardiff Bay. So I don't really know a great deal about it. We'll see for the first time. It's actually what we're using as the shakedown on the Wednesday evening. So we'll know a little bit more then. But yeah, from what I hear, it's quite short, and it's a blast around the docks for the spectators.
And it's tarmac as well.
I must say, which was the year that Loeb hurt himself and he missed Rally GB?
2006.
Because I was there that year, and in fact I was at Eppington. I mean, I was suitably impressed, believe me. But the day finished with this thing, and it was actually in the stadium.
Oh, that's right.
And I just thought, ye gods, this is, you know. I know it's the sort of TV audience is the only one that matters, and all the rest of it. But I just thought, this is no place in a World Championship event. It was just. What did you think? It was sort of fun, but you know.
I mean, it's not from. I mean, he can say, but I mean, from a driver's point of view, they're not. You're right. They're not the sort of thing that you really enjoy. You don't get real pleasure out of.
Well, it's like the Race of Champions. You know,
I mean, it's
sort of fun, but
it's the guy who's the neatest and can keep the nice tidy line. It tends to be the quickest, but it's not. I don't think it's a big spectacle. Something like that. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are super specials, which are quite spectacular, but that particular one in the stadium, I didn't feel was what really rallying is all about. This one in the bay, hopefully, should be a little bit better.
Certainly, yeah.
But of course, you know, the stadiums, it's great to get easy to get all the spectators in, and so from that point,
and there were a hell of a lot there.
Yeah,
I think the thing with it as well, you maybe get people into it that won't go and traipse into the middle of a Welsh forest and stand and get soaking wet, you know.
Well, it's true, but I mean, if you, on the other hand, if you only saw that, you know,
you wouldn't get the
stadium,
a great impression of rallying.
And I mean, having seen Eppant, you know, a few hours earlier, I mean,
I think one other thing, maybe with places like that, would, you know, like my dad said, the neatest and tidiest is the fastest, but that obviously doesn't make for spectacular viewing. So maybe if it wasn't timed and the driver could put on a bit more of a show, then it would make it more exciting. But like you say, you know, you're keeping it neat and tidy, and it isn't spectacular either.
No, I mean, you've got to say, haven't you, that this, the worldwide success and popularity of Ken Block is partly due to the fact that people just love to see this car doing these ridiculous things at all angles, sideways, dust everywhere, whizzing through buildings. I mean, people love that kind of stuff. And what I don't understand about World Rally Championship is we all round this table, we love it. We like watching it. I mean, okay, we're not mega enthusiasts. So why isn't it more popular? Why isn't it on telly? Why isn't it like Formula One? You know, I mean, I don't get it.
Well, I think the great thing from our point of view is that Jean Todt has now gone public and said that he wants to get rallying back where he believes that it should be, and he thinks it should be in every country. But we are definitely suffering here, and I think another reason is that we don't have a Burns and a McRae either battling it out, and you know, all the things.
Got Matthew Wilson there.
Yeah, we need more. we need more Brits in there, so that at least, you know, there's more to talk about.
I think that's
so. I think, and as well, is that, you know, it's now only. It's not going to happen overnight, but we've got a global promoter now in North One. So, you know, at least they've got a long-term contract, so they can now invest. And hopefully, as I say, I think with what's happening, with the talk of Mini, confirmed of Mini, but, you know, there's other manufacturers that are talking about coming in, Volkswagen, people like that, Saab. So I think once you attract more manufacturers, then for sure, it's going to create more interest, and I think the sport is going to definitely grow. I think it's... The foundations are there now, but it's not going to happen overnight.
One of the things you're mentioning, you know, we haven't got a Burns and McRae. Next generation's always a big talking point in rallying. You've just got the contract for the new FIA Academy to build the cars for that, trying to get young drivers into the World Rally Championship. How difficult is it these days to get your break and get through? Is it harder than it's ever been?
Well, it's been difficult, certainly the last couple of years, because there's only been the two manufacturers. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's been helped by the M2 teams, that, you know, the Citroën Junior team and the Stobart team, people like that. So that's helped. But I'm still a firm believer that if the talent is there and the desire is there from the driver, he will still find a way to get to the top. And I think the academy is a great opportunity for us, because you know everybody's going to be in the same car. We're going to be able to see who's actually got the real potential. So I think that's another big step for the sport, that you know it means that somebody can get in it at a realistic cost. And I think it, you know, with it being FIA supported, at least it's given a lot of the ASNs the encouragement to invest in a driver from their country in the academy.
And is there anyone coming onto the radar you've got your eye on, young drivers coming up?
Yeah, I mean, there are, don't get me wrong, there are, there are drivers that that we're watching at the moment, and there's definitely, you know, there's no question there's potential world champions out there.
Would you like to name one or two or not?
No, I think I prefer to just keep those names to myself at the moment.
No, that's a no, yes, okay, yeah. Right. Okay. Well, listen to this space. Maybe we can persuade these great Wilson guys to come back another time next year. Maybe, who knows? Well, I've asked them now, haven't I? Is it possible that David Richards Pro Drive and the Mini, what used to be called the Countryman, I don't know what it's called now, this Mini, is it possible they could come in and sort of do a Brawn, if you like, or isn't that really feasible in world rallying?
I think it's going to be very difficult. Because the one is drivers for a start off, but you know, again, being out of it for the last couple of years, it's not easier. Certainly, it's not something that I would be comfortable about if we said, right, well, we're going to stop for 12 months, we're going to develop a new car. I certainly wouldn't be comfortable with that position, and that's something that I've always sort of said to Ford. You know, we have to keep going, we have to keep the continuity, because you know, you're always learning, you're always picking things. It's like, as I said, even this season when you couldn't really evolve the car that much, we found ways between Bulgaria and Finland. Now, if we hadn't been rallying, we wouldn't have found that, and we can transfer that technology that we've learned into next year's car. Sure. So it'd be great if they could come and really knock on the door from the first event, but I think that's going to be quite difficult for them.
When you say partly because of the drivers, I mean that that is a comment about Chris Meek, isn't it? Or isn't it?
I mean, he hasn't got the WRC experience. There's what we've been talking about, the knowledge of the stages and building. You know, he's very fast, but of course, we've seen with Kimi. Kimi's very, very quick as well. So it would be unfair, to be honest, on Chris to expect him to come in and win in the first season, just like a lot of people thought Kimi would. There's no way that Chris is going to be able to do that. He needs to build up the experience, and just hope that he gets that opportunity to, you know, get that length of time that it's going to take. And of course, it depends who they have as their other driver as well. But you know, there's as we all know, there's very few people who have won rallies in the last few years.
Absolutely.
And they're all basically, they've all got seats for next year. So
Matthew, somebody in our office, I won't tell you who in case you don't like the question, suggested to me that you've been on some sort of 5-year program here, in the sense of, how do you honestly feel you've done over the last 5 years, and what have you got to do now? Because, you know, we all want you to be right up there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have been on a 5-year plan, and that plan was basically, we had a little bit of security that we knew that, you know, we would be competing, you know, year after year, unlike a lot of drivers have had. You know, they have to basically prove themselves from year to year to try and get the funding for the following year. And I think we were lucky, we had that security of knowing that, you know, we could do the first 2 or 3 years of basically just finishing the rallies, learning as much as we could, and with no real pressure. But I think that then, you know, the last couple of years we've had to show that more, you know, that pace, and show that you can, you know, be up there. And I think realistically we've got to the level where I think we're, the best way to describe it is, we're best of the rest. You know, there's the works drivers and there's Petter, and then I think, you know, we're in that gap. And I think really making that transition from being fourth, fifth, sixth to stepping onto the podium, it's a fraction of an amount, but it takes a lot. And I think he knows as well, you know, he's experienced it as well, that next level is the hardest place point to take. But yeah, don't get me wrong, this year we were looking for more. There's been some good rallies for us, but there's been some where we weren't happy and we wanted more from them. But like I said, hopefully next year's car should suit us more. But I think the other scenario as well is maybe we've been a little bit unlucky with timing as well. I mean, we're in it at a point where there is only two manufacturers, so there is only four works drives. If you go back to 2001 or 2002, there was six or seven teams, and most of them teams had three cars. You know, I think the scenario would be very, very different if you were in that era. But that's the way it is, and like we've all said here, that more manufacturers there is, the more drives there is, then there's more opportunities for younger drivers like myself. So I think it's been good to have that security, and I think obviously that maybe ends now. But if we can get something sorted for next year and have a real good go at it, and in a car that hopefully should suit us, then we might be able to make that step up to that podium level, if you like.
Malcolm, how damaging or positive has it been to have two series, having the Intercontinental Series vying with the World Rally Championship for attention and taking manufacturers who could be in WRC away, would you say?
I don't think they're vying for each other. I think there's still room for both championships to continue. And it's not, I mean, I know what you're saying, but there's really only one manufacturer in there in IRC, which is Skoda, that's doing it as a factory effort. I mean, all the other sort of programs are sort of national sales orientated, and I think it's probably going to move even more so that way next season. So I don't really, as I say, I think there's a place for both championships. They're going to continue next year with just the normally aspirated Super 2000 category. And don't get me wrong, they've been getting some very, very strong entries. But, you know, there's still the level of, and the standard of the drivers. You know, you see when the likes of the Hanninens and what have you go to the WRC, that there's still a big step between an IRC level of driver and a WRC top line driver.
Yeah, but it still seems to me that losing Monte Carlo, for example, is a mistake.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, Monte Carlo should be in the World Championship. I mean, it's the rally that everybody knows. But I think, you know, that's an issue that's it's a political issue, should we say? And hopefully, you know, again, that's hopefully something else that, you know, Jean Todt can get addressed, because you know, we need Monte in WRC. We did Monte Carlo this year with the Fiesta. Purely because we felt it was a great platform, you know, to, if you can win Monte Carlo first time out with a new car, then, you know, it did the job for us. And, you know, as much as, you know, we probably won't be going back next year, because we use it for a purpose. But it's just a shame that it's not in WRC.
Do you like what you're hearing and seeing from Todd?
Yeah, I mean, some of the I like the thing for me is the fact that he wants to get rallying back. That's the most important thing.
Yeah,
I think some of the things we've been working with him quite a bit, and I think he would like to go back to how a lot of the rallying was in the old days. But I mean, being realistic, it's not. You can't really go back to those days. I mean, there were great days, and even when I did the old RSE rally a couple of years ago, it was fantastic. You know, pulling out at the end of a stage, servicing at the end, right on the roadside, and you know, but you can't days. Really the good old days. You can't really go back to that. I mean,
talking about the good old days. You know, I mean, will we ever see a return to sort of night stages and things like that? Because, you know, they were so spectacular. And it's...
Yeah, I mean, that's been talked about. There's no question that that will come back. But again, of course, you know, there's all the safety issues to think about as well. It's, you know, with currently as it stands, is that, you know, unless we can have helicopter cover, then you can't really run a WRC stage. So there's things like that need to be addressed. How they can we can cover it from a safety point of view.
which again everybody they are looking at, because as you all know it's there's a bit more mystique and everything about it if you can have the night stages.
Yeah.
Do you think modern rallying is as challenging as it used to be? Matthew's nodding.
Well, I mean, they're like sleeping.
Put it this way, from a driver's point of view, I mean, it's not everybody's still driving.
Mm.
In the old days, the drivers drove flat out, so I don't think there's any difference there. I think, and of course, cars are a lot more reliable now.
Mm.
So I think there's more on the engineering and design now than there ever used to be. I mean, you know, it's.
To be honest, though, I mean, I don't know. It's not the spectacle it was, is it? Is it?
I think if you went and stood in a stage, a quick stage in Finland or a quick
if
stage on Rally
Jimmy, I'll be there.
I will invite you then.
Great.
Because
okay.
If
you're on, I'll be there.
Rob, I was impressed by Appen, I can tell you.
Yes, I can. And it's not blagging a trip, it's just that I love watching in some of those places in Wales. But anyway, back to my thing. Yeah, you're right, probably. Okay, Mr. Editor. But the thing is, all right, I know we can't keep looking back. Fine. And I'm sure from where Matthew's sitting, it's extremely exciting. I don't doubt it for a moment. But it isn't the thing where we used to tune in to William Willard at 8 o'clock on BBC Two, and here we were in the middle of this forest in the middle of the night.
Yeah, but that's because it's you're right. We've touched on it before. It's because it's not on TV like it was. And, I mean, it's not followed. For instance, Rally GB is not followed like it used to. As you say, the William Willard is. I remember that because my car was BBC Top Gear or whatever it was in 1980.
But it was brilliant.
Yeah, but it's still brilliant. It's just
well,
it's not.
Rob,
it's not
I've got a DVD. I mean, which was the Rally in Ireland that Loeb did prior to the first Irish Rally in the World Championship?
Donegal.
Yeah, that's right. Have you ever seen the DVD they made of Loeb on that rally?
No.
It's just fantastic because, you know, starting off, they are nowhere.
Yeah.
Because the conditions are like they've never seen. And, of course, he wins in the end. They get better and better. Some of the footage in that, Rob, if you saw that, I swear to God, you wouldn't be saying it's not spectacular you know, it's eye-opening.
I'll stop after this point. I just thought the whole thing of when these guys, you know, they literally didn't sleep for however long it was. They drove, you know, forever and ever through the night, through the day, whatever. It was an incredible sort of adventure, if you like. And I suppose what you're saying is, all right, well, that isn't safe anymore. This is what we have now, and that's it.
Yeah, but it was an adventure, but there wasn't the close competition that there is now. I mean, right. Rallies, after 3 days, we're talking about going round and round circuits. And we had a New Zealand rally a couple of years ago, and it's won by 0.3 of a second.
Mm.
After 3 days of
when in the old days that was hours, you know, yes. It was minutes or even hours on some events, you
it's
know.
It's much more intense now, surely.
Yeah.
It must
yeah.
be.
Yeah, I mean, if a driver built up a lead on years ago, as long as he didn't have any technical issues, then he was going to win the rally.
Mm.
But, you know, 3 days and 0.3 of a second.
Yeah.
Come on, we definitely need to get you out to a stage.
Yeah. Well, I'm on my way already.
Actually, can I ask both of you, which the year round is the rally you most look forward to going to?
From my side, from a driver's point of view, I think New Zealand is the ultimate. Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. The roads are just, well, they are basically used roads that are used every day, gravel roads that are used on take kids to school with the bus,
yes,
or whatever.
Yeah.
But they're just unlike anything else in the world. And from a driver's point of view, it's incredible. Don't get me wrong, Finland as well. Finland is another.
Yeah, I suppose
unique,
that was the one I was expecting.
Another unique place, but I think there, I think it's probably if you're a Scandinavian, it's probably a little bit easier for you. But in terms of adrenaline, probably Finland does win. But I think from actual pleasure of driving, it has to be New Zealand. Yeah,
that's interesting.
From my point, going back a few years, then the one that was the biggest challenge from a team point of view was Safari Rally.
Yes.
Because there's so many aspects to it. You know, there was speed, there was reliability, there was the
animals,
everything that, you know, everybody, I believe that everybody in the team played a major part. You couldn't win the Safari Rally unless Ebbing was right. So that was the biggest challenge. I suppose now in the current era, the two rallies for me are, again, one because I used to, from a driving point, I used to enjoy it more than anything, was Sweden. Mm-hmm. Just been able to go so fast and not scrub speed off when you know, it's one of the few places, even if you're fully sideways, you're not actually sort of scrubbing speed off. It's a tremendous feeling. Mm.
Oh, and we should tell you. You should see his face.
and Finland, because again, yes, we class it as the Grand Prix of the World Rally Championship.
Yes, yes.
And from my point of view, to win Finland,
it's the sort of spa.
Believe as well that you know it's that becomes the turning point in a driver's career. Mm. I've seen it so many times. That, you know, once a driver wins Finland, it's a big turning point. You know, we saw it last year with Mikko, that, you know, it came to within 1 point. Jari Matti this year, we've seen it in the past with the Carlos's and the Didier Orioles, and the, you know, it's just such a fantastic, and you know, you're talking about speed and spectacular. I mean, if that is the one rally to go and watch, I mean, you would just be absolutely blown away by the speed that these guys do now on a gravel surface.
Looking forward to
But even Finland, I mean, people say to me these days, "Oh yeah, yeah, it's great stuff," but it's not what it was. I mean, what you don't have is probably what you're saying is
the Mark II Escorts having gone sideways.
Yeah,
what you do have now is the speed. You go to a test even, and I mean, my technicians come back from France the other day from the test in the Fiesta, and they said they were standing in a place where they thought they would be fine just watching Jari Matti go around, and they all ran back. They were frightened. They thought there's no way that he could get round the corner.
Fantastic.
And you know, that's people who are involved in the sport, but they all come back and they were all just buzzing about, they just thought it was impossible to stay on the road.
Matthew, do you ever frighten yourself doing this?
Not really. I mean, I remember the first time I ever did Rally Finland, and the classic Uninpoja stage, it was actually broken in out like this, and it was shaking. I mean, I must admit that was probably the only time. And then after that, you're used to it, and you're used to what you need to do. But I must admit, that first time was incredible. You just think, I physically can't. How can you go this quickly on gravel? And then I remember you get to one junction, and we actually have it in the pace notes that it gets faster now. And you think, how the hell can this stage get any faster than what it is? But yeah, it does get faster, but you think it's impossible, really.
Yeah.
Well, I think just about all of us in this room have at some time or another sat alongside these people. And I must say, you've only got to do it once to be in total awe of what you do. Incredible. Can I quickly ask you, you mentioned that Saab and Volkswagen might be coming in. How real is this?
Well, it seems we've certainly, Volkswagen, we've been involved with meetings with where we've been with the FIA, and they seem very, very positive towards WRC. And you know, from the Saab point of view, I think you people have probably read the same as what I've read. But I know working with North One, they've been in deep discussions with them about all the marketing and the promotional side. So. Yeah, if you could get another iconic brand like that back in rally, then I think I really genuinely believe the sport is really going to develop in the next few years. It's not going to happen next year, but certainly in the next few years, I can really see it getting back to where we all believe. Well, certainly we believe. I don't know about you guys, you roundy guys, you know, where it's going to get to.
But, roundy.
No, I think everyone wants to see it back to where it was. I think that you look back, and naturally the times when you've got all the manufacturers in and all the star drivers, it's naturally going to be harked back to. But it does seem, from our point of view as well, that there's a brighter horizon ahead now with the new rules as well, and as you say, the cars being more spectacular, that you can grab back the attention that has been lost, I guess.
Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier again about the entry level, the cost now is, you know, it's more realistic, should we say, than ever before. I mean, I think, you know, if you go back a few years, then for sure, you know, we were building cars that were you know, costing nearly £600,000. So, so there's been, you know,
how long ago, Malcolm?
A couple of years ago. Really? I mean, the current car, sort of cost that sort of money.
Yeah.
And of course, we reduced that by more than 50% with the Super 2000. Mm. But of course, the new car is going to be more expensive because there's, again, it's really centred around the engine. Going back to 1.6 turbo and making it last two engines for the season.
But yeah, sure.
Then of course, then you're running costs because you're not rebuilding your engine every rally.
Yeah.
So, been a big big push on that side from a cost saving point of view.
Mm.
When you talk about Volkswagen, do you think that they will come back as Volkswagen or will come back as Skoda, bearing in mind the success of the Fabia?
No, certainly the conversations we've had that it would be the brand would be VW. I think that Skoda are going to continue as they are with IRC and because that's basically their customer business. Yeah. I think they've done 30 cars or something now.
Yeah.
So certainly what we've been told is that it would be VW.
Yeah, I went over to Wolfsburg earlier this year actually and talked to them, and they said that they were very much looking into rallying because the engine that, you know, they will use is something they actually sell in their road cars, and that is just a massive part of their decision. That's why they said, you know, Formula One has no interest to us at all because, you know, how do you market that as our brand? So I think they obviously were. I mean, you know, it looks hopeful, I think.
Yeah, well, as I say, we're all, because, you know, that's, if you could get somebody like them in as well, then it would.
Also, of course, roundy cars cost a damn sight more than 600k. Well, maybe on that note, we'll finish. Shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much. Goes without saying. Thanks so much, Malcolm Matthew Wilson from the BP Ford Abu Dhabi Rally Team. And good luck in Wales. We'll be rooting for you.
Thank you very much.
Good
Thank
fun.
You.
It's true what they say about rally guys and bike guys. They're great fun to talk to. I must tell you that these podcasts rely on you. And when I say you, I mean you, the audience. Because without you listening and without you buying our magazine, we will not be able to continue. And it would be enormously helpful to all of us if you were to consider subscribing to Motorsport magazine. And there are some good reasons why you should do this, the main one being that you will save over 23% on the cover price. That is quite a saving. And this time round, in the subscription offer, you will also get a free hip flask. Yep. You will have... Importantly, you will have your own dedicated customer service team, which I must say, these days, is worth money. Have you tried calling BT? So you get your own customer service team, and I really would love it if more of you would subscribe to our magazine, because it's going to help us. It'll help you save money. It's a fantastic magazine. Malcolm Wilson's been reading it during most of this podcast, I've got to tell you.
And I buy it as well.
Wow. Fantastic. What a great note to end on. And also, how wonderful to hear that WRC, within a couple of years or so, is going to come right back and be the fantastic sport it should be. So thanks for listening. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to Alan on the machinery behind me. And we'll see you next month. Goodbye.
Motorsport Magazine, for the very best in motor racing.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.